Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Training camp is almost here. We'll talk about it with ESPN's Justin Verrier on this episode of Locked On Pelicans. I'm Brett Dawson.
Including this, blowing in the ear of LeBron James. And James' reaction, he can't believe it. And I know you guys, I mean, Stevenson has been a huge part of the turnaround. He's still shaking up from that bad hit. And sometimes this stuff gets himself going, can get his team going. But at one point did the antics become a detriment? Why would he even bother trying to get at LeBron James? It backfired him.
The Lance Stevenson highlight. I'm Brett Dawson. I cover the Pelicans for the New Orleans Advocate. This is Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And that was the highlight you probably know if you know who Lance Stevenson is, the blowing in the ear of LeBron James. Now you know that Lance Stevenson is part of the Pelicans. He's officially signed a contract. Doesn't mean he's going to be on the team. 15 guaranteed contracts. No guarantees that Lance Stevenson will be on the team coming out of camp. But we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes with Justin Verrier from ESPN. So we'll dive into all that stuff and more in just a few minutes. Before we get into that, really, Lance Stevenson is the news of the week this week. Signed a contract with the Pelicans to come to camp. That is not a guaranteed contract. My understanding at this point is that there was some portion of money guaranteed. I don't think it's a significant amount of money, but there will be something. The Pelicans will be on the hook for something if they cut him. I do think there's some guaranteed money, but not a guaranteed spot on the team. He's going to have to impress in training camp, and there's every chance he might do that for a team that has some real needs, obviously, with Tyreke Evans being a little uncertain and Drew Holiday being out for the start of the season, which we've talked about, and we will talk about some more with Justin. And so the Lance Stevenson thing will be a mystery. It'll just add to the sort of uncertainty around this team and sort of the intrigue. This should definitely be an interesting training camp. So I don't think anybody's going to be really bored as the Pelicans go through camp and into preseason. That's really the significant news of the week. The Pelicans are working out. They're getting very much closer to the start of training camp. Media day. By the time you hear this, may only be a week away or less. It's next Friday, September 23rd. I believe, and I think the 24th then would be the first day of practice. I could have those dates off by a day. I'm not looking at a calendar, but next Friday and Saturday, media day and the start of practice. So things are happening. It's going to be time for camp, and before you know it, time for preseason. So it's an exciting time, just about to gear back up. I know I talked about the possibility of multiple podcasts this week. Been a challenging week. I'm off right now. I'm trying to get a little time away, and so been a little bit challenging for me to find places to podcast and just get the logistics down. But very fortunate to have Justin this week. Been wanting to have him for a little while. Had some audio difficulties. I think I've edited those pretty well. You might have a couple of spots where it's a little dicey, but I think for the most part, it's pretty good. Skype connection, just not always super reliable. Usually does pretty well, but I hope I'll be able to clean that up and make it pretty good for you. So we will jump into talking to Justin here in just a second, but got to make a few announcements first, of course. So the first thing I want to do is tell you a little bit about SeatGeek. I told you last week I've been both a customer with SeatGeek and I worked for a website that had a business partnership with the company. And I know that really it's an innovative place that set out to do a really simple thing, which was make it easier to buy sports and concert tickets online. And the way that SeatGeek does that is by doing price comparison work for you. It's going to do your comparison shopping by searching multiple ticket sites. And not only that, it's going to find you tickets, but then it's going to show you how good a deal you're getting on each ticket. You're going to get a deal score on every ticket that you see. You're going to get the most bang for your buck. The best way to do that, in my opinion, is to use the SeatGeek app. And if you haven't done that, I'm going to give you a great incentive to do it. Download the SeatGeek app. go to the settings tab and click add a promo code and enter the code LOPELS. That's LOPELS. You do that, SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So we're getting into a busy time. The NFL is underway. The NBA is just around the corner. Of course, if you live in New Orleans, there's a ton of concerts. SeatGeek, absolutely the best way to shop for tickets for all of those events. I also want to remind you that, you know, the NFL season is in full swing now. College football is a couple of weeks in, and the NBA season is right around the corner. And the place to go for coverage of all those things is theadvocate.com. We got your Pelicans, we got your Saints, we got your LSU. You want to go there every day, especially as we get closer to the start of camp in the NBA. You're going to get coverage from me and from Scott Kushner and from our columnist Rod Walker about the Pelicans. So make sure you're checking out theadvocate.com. Also want to remind you, if you haven't yet, to subscribe to this podcast. Go to your podcast provider of choice, your iTunes, your Stitcher, and click on that subscribe button. Also, go to iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. A 5-star rating is great. A positive review really helps us. Just gets us out there a little bit more, gets our name out there, gets us a few more listeners, which is something that we definitely want to do. So definitely subscribe, rate, and review. Okay, so we are getting very close to the start of this NBA season. As I said, camp is right around the corner. And to talk about all of that, I wanted to have Justin Verrier on from ESPN. I've gotten to know Justin pretty well in this past year as we both covered the Pelicans for the first time. He came in the winter. I started in the fall, but we've gotten to become friends. And he's somebody whose opinion about the Pelicans I like to hear, and I put a lot of stock in. So I wanted to have him on. The summer is a bit of a challenging time for scheduling, as we will get into. So finally got to have him on. I'm pretty excited about that to kind of preview the season, talk about Lance Stephenson, talk about Jrue Holiday, talk about Anthony Davis. There's all kinds of topics. As I said before, there's a little bit of issue with the sound in a couple of places. Just the connection was a little dicey. I've tried to cut out the places where it was bad, and I've tried to not make that editing too awkward so you don't get a lot of stops and starts. We had to end the call at least once and reconnect. But so you might hear a couple of places where it's not great. Keep with it. I promise that the vast majority of it sounds pretty good. Just a couple of spots where it'll be a little rough. And with that said, let's get into talking to Justin. All right, so Justin Verrier is with us. Justin, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I've been trying to do this. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. You took a really long vacation. It's nice that you got to do that, but it's bad for this podcast.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't able to take your call as I was traipsing through Vietnam and eating many a noodle and stuffing my face. So, but we're here now.
Yeah. What people don't know, actually, multiple episodes of this podcast were recorded at your apartment because I stayed there while you were gone.
That's true, yeah, and I can feel it. when I sit at my desk, I could kind of feel the aura still around. So it's really inspiring.
Yep, I just wrecked your place. I left it a total mess. Had huge parties. It was awesome.
Yeah, I can. It's still here though, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was very nice of you. So people who don't know Justin is you're like the only person around the Pelicans who's like a New Orleans newcomer compared to me. Because I got there in September and you got there in February, is that?
Yeah, around then.
So I'm a veteran compared to you. It's I know this scene so much better than you do. I don't.
Really. Yeah, I still feel kind of like a tourist here, just because I mean, even during the season, I was traveling a lot, and as you just mentioned, I kind of popped out of town a lot during the off season. So I'm still kind of like using the GPS to get around, even though there are like 12 streets here, and kind of figuring everything out. But luckily everyone here is super nice, including the Advocate's own Scott Kushner, who's kind of been my unofficial shaman of New Orleans here.
That's his official goal in life, I think. It's like his role in life is just to introduce people to New Orleans. He's like, he's an advocate, you might say. You shouldn't say that, but I just did. But he's very much perfect. A guy who introduces people to the city. He likes it very much. So that's a good role for him. It's good you've taken advantage. But in the short time that Justin has been in New Orleans, I'm going to go ahead and say, while we are competitors and we both want to do better work about the Pelicans than the other guy does, I will say that we are friends. You can refute that. You can fire away at it if you want to.
Yeah, I hate you.
I thought you were saving that for this very moment.
Yeah, no, we spend many a time on Press Row just dancing to the grooves of the Smoothie King Center.
In the grand old days of courtside seating for the media.
Oh man, I'm gonna miss that so much. Just listening to Alvin Gentry just MF like just everybody and just talk to the fans was by far the best part of any of those games.
That is, you know, the thing about the seating is gonna change. We're gonna be further up, and for watching basketball, that's not so bad. Like, I don't want to be the guy that sits here and complains about media seating, because actually, for watching the game where we sat, and I really don't want to complain about our old seats, but you couldn't see part of the court. It is a little bit difficult to see things unfold. We'll be in a better seat from that standpoint, but I will miss that stuff because Alvin Gentry he's a hoot, you might say, during those games. He's a blast to be that close to.
Yeah, one might say that. My favorite, like, I had only been to a certain amount of games because, as you mentioned, I'd just kind of checked in February, but my favorite, like, story of that time was when I remember Darren Erman, defensive coordinator extraordinaire of the Pelicans, was kind of trying to tell Ryan Anderson something. He was trying to call out like what they were doing on, I believe it was Robert Covington. He's literally telling Anderson what we're doing, which I believe was showing on Covington. And Covington just happened to be sitting on the press table, just waiting to check in. So Ryan Anderson's like, "What are you doing?" And he goes over to Covington. He's like, "We're showing on you." You get stuff like that. Not the best view, but yeah, for sure. The color is great.
Yeah, I will miss being able to hear all that stuff. And that, you know, like, we might be able to hear Alvin from upstairs on occasion, but not to the level. We won't certainly be able to hear the players the way we could and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, RIP.
Yeah, it's too bad. But enjoy those seats, people who buy those seats, because, you know, it's going to cost you.
Right, yeah. And you get a nice view of like Joel Myers' head, I guess.
Yeah, and who doesn't want that, right?
Right, exactly.
So, people, I talk about myself a little too much on this podcast, so people know a little bit about my background and how I got to be here, and some people know that about you as well. But for people who don't know, first, let's tell everybody the terrible, terrible basketball school you went to college at, where you attended college.
The University of Connecticut, multi-time champions, I should say.
Yeah. Better, would you say, than Syracuse, where Jim Eichenhofer did not attend but does root for?
I think you could say that, even objectively.
Yeah, I agree, actually. Sorry, Jim. It's, you know, it's proof's in the pudding. It's championships. I went to Kentucky, which is 1-8, so that's a lot.
That's a few.
Yeah, but Connecticut beats them all the time. So, like, Connecticut just constantly beats Kentucky. And also, I covered Kentucky, so I really have no affinity for the basketball program. It's just kind of like whatever.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same. Even though I only covered the team when I was in school, it's just the fandom of you in you kind of just drains as you're just like talking to these guys and trying to view it objectively as possible. But then, you know, when I got out of school, actually, I started to kind of develop some fandom again. That's probably the one team that I could still kind of root for. I don't know how you feel about that.
I don't like because I covered my alma mater like professionally, like, you know, at a newspaper and everything. I still haven't gotten that back for Kentucky. And maybe if I go on and cover the NBA for a long time and, you know, once all the I mean, at Kentucky, all the players I covered already are gone, basically. But they were gone like immediately. But, you know, over time, the coach changes and you're not as professionally connected to a place. It might change over time. You know, like, I root for my college paper to win awards, but I don't really root for the team. I don't really have a team left because you know, I grew up a Knicks fan, NBA-wise, and I don't know. I mean, like, now that I cover the league, I don't think about them that way, but they're also terrible. So maybe if they get good, maybe I would root again. That's a possibility. I wouldn't rule that out.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the benefits I have with covering the NBA for so long. It's just I never really grew up an NBA fan because in Connecticut, where I lived pretty much most of my life up until recently, there really isn't much of an NBA pull, especially just because Red Sox Yankees when I was growing up was such a big deal, and then even just football, just big everywhere. The Patriots, just like loaded on the bandwagon when I was in high school and around that age. So I didn't really have much of an NBA team, which actually makes this pretty nice for me now, just because I've been able to kind of work generally in the league, and then just kind of look at it and just kind of pick and choose like fun teams and like guys that I'm interested in. So it's been nice in that respect.
Yeah, even as somebody who did root for the Knicks as a kid, and it's a long, weird story of how I came to the Knicks because it's just like weird. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and I rooted for the Knicks, but nobody roots for the Pacers in Louisville. So like everybody just picks a team, and everybody's either a fan of the Lakers, Celtics, Bulls, or Knicks. And now I'm sure, you know, Warriors and Thunder and whoever else, and all the teams that have Kentucky players is all, and whatever else, there's all kinds of reasons, but nobody has, there's not a regional team that anybody roots for. The Pacers just weren't weren't that kind of thing. So, but even that way, I still am somebody like I have League Pass. I don't watch the Knicks very much because, you know, you're covering the Pelicans and you don't get to watch a million games. You don't get to watch a game every night or whatever. And when you have time and you do get to watch a game, I didn't want to watch the Knicks because I would rather watch somebody that's fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually think that's it's funny that so put on some of those end of the season awards, because this is my first season kind of covering one team the entire way. And like, man, I struggle to even find the time to watch some of these other guys and really kind of dig into like how they're doing and, you know, how they're playing as opposed to some of the other guys. So yeah, it's difficult, and I really don't get as much time as I'd like. But
I lost you right at the beginning there, but I think what you said at the very beginning of that was, I'm using context clues here as a reporter, that you were saying that it's like weird that people like us get to vote in awards like that, because you watch one team and that's, it takes up so much of your time. You don't see that much of the rest of the league.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think like we stare at the Pelicans for so long that like, even last season, as things were getting really brutal, you were trying to find like silver linings, yeah, and like write about Tim Frazier and, you know, Luke Babbitt just tearing it up on the offensive end, that it's really tough to kind of divert your attention to the other stuff.
That is correct. What a fun time it was when Luke Babbitt was like their best offensive player, because while I do like Luke Babbitt, I set a goal last year early in the season to be like, I want to have an interesting conversation with Luke Babbitt after a game and just like get him to talk about something, just get him to loosen up. Kendrick Perkins said that he got Babbitt to loosen up a little bit. And I thought, okay, there's a challenge. And it just, he's a nice guy, but that was just not going to happen. He's just not a guy who enjoys the little give and take that a guy like Ryan Anderson, for example, does enjoy. That is not Luke Babbitt's thing.
Exactly. And like, even Omer has a little bit of that. Like, he really hates talking to us. I think I only literally talked to him once, but because we cornered him that time.
Yeah.
I believe it was like a pre-game shoot around or something like that. And even that, there's like a little bit of humor to that, because it's such a thing within the locker room and with him that you can kind of joke about that and like, you know, snicker off to the side, like, ha ha, you never talked to us. Whereas with Luke, it was just like, there wasn't even that to kind of get into.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the fact that Omer hates talking to the media is a thing that the media likes to talk to Omer about, which is,
right,
it's a weird dynamic, but it works because there's not that many things that get him kind of laughing, but he will do that. I think somebody, it might've been John Reed last year, like introduced himself to Omer as if like, it's been so long since I've seen you that I have to tell you who I am. And he got a kick out of it. He liked that sort of thing, but yeah, I was there the whole season. I don't think I talked to him a lot more than that.
Yeah. And I remember, I think it might've been the Bulls game, because obviously he played there.
Yeah.
And we were kind of astonished when he went up to one of the Bulls radio guys and like shook his hand and was talking to him for at least over a minute. Which is a whole new record. And I think we saw a whole new Omer that we don't really get the privilege of seeing.
A whole old Omer, maybe. Like, maybe Omer used to be this great guy in Chicago to deal with from the media standpoint. But now it's like, we used to I asked somebody, I think several of us were around having this conversation about whether Omer showered after games, because he would get out so fast that we wondered if he even took time to shower. And one of the players said, sometimes. Like, sometimes yes, sometimes no. All right, so a little bit of audio trouble. We might have fixed that. We might be better now.
Yeah, you missed all of the really important scathing details of our conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I think once we started talking about Omer Asik and showering, it just it went downhill from there.
Too much sexiness,
yeah.
I guess.
That's clearly it. So let's shift gears a little bit to this team. You know, we've talked since last week, and the Jrue Holiday situation, and the Lauren Holiday situation, I should say. And I know because we had a discussion about it, your reaction was a little bit like mine, which is, I mean, obviously your first reaction is this is a terrible thing for Lauren Holiday, who is going through, I mean, what should be just this great time in her life, and now a very difficult thing to have happen. It's a difficult thing for Jrue. It's a difficult thing for the family. And that's the human reaction. And then because of what we do, the next reaction is, boy, this is going to hurt them a lot. This is going to have a whole lot of impact on what's happening with this team.
Yeah. Yeah. And then obviously, you know, just to echo what you're saying, just a rough situation for Jrue, especially just considering, you know, his history with the leg injuries and last year, just kind of finally being able to look like the guy I think they traded for a few years back, for this to kind of, you know, and just get in his way, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, I think two things about this. I think the roster moves that they made this offseason, it did seem like everything that they did was in order to kind of take advantage of the two guys that they kind of built their foundation around. Obviously, Anthony Davis, and then trading for Jrue Holiday is kind of the guy to be his pick and roll partner, so to speak. And it does kind of show, like, outside of that, you know, like what really this team kind of has. I know SI did recently that kind of top 100 list, and it looks like Anthony Davis is going to be the only guy on that list. So, and the other thing was just kind of like launching off of that, just like the lack of backcourt depth. I didn't really realize, unless they had Jrue out there, they're kind of limited in what they can do. I mean, they brought in a lot of guys like Etuan Moore and Langston Galloway, but I don't know if those are the type of guys you really want starting at the one there. So they're in another kind of rough position to start with, which is particularly bad considering the way they started last year, which I know you got a kind of front row seat for.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Obviously, you look at what happened last year and they start off 1-11 or whatever it was. And for whatever they said from that point on, you know, about it's a long season, that is true. There's time to make a run, also true. The schedule softened late in the year, also true. But effectively, you're almost out of the playoffs 12 games in because it was just going to be so hard. It turns out the West was soft enough that if they'd been healthy with that schedule, I think they could have made a run, but they didn't, and they weren't. And I think there's certainly, I think, some fear of that same situation because this year is really different from last year from this standpoint. One, I mean, you're a year closer to Anthony Davis's free agency. Every year, there's a little bit more urgency. But I also think for the front office, for the people that have, you know, for Dell Demps and the people who built this team, for Alvin Gentry, this isn't the first year. And regardless of circumstances, if they're bad again, if they're off to a really bad start, the pressure is going to be a lot higher this year, I think, than last. The sort of job pressure that they feel is going to be different.
Yeah, and you know, I was one of the guys I think that had come around to like maybe if everything goes right with some of the moves that they made and just kind of some better health, that this was a team that could potentially get into the playoffs. I definitely put them within the mix considering, you know, there are a lot of good teams in the West, but some of the teams at the bottom half of that are still, you know, not sure things. Memphis, Houston, Minnesota, some of those teams, I think there are still kind of big question marks.
Dallas.
Dallas, absolutely. So I kind of like, I don't know if it's because I'm so close to the team at this point, I'm just kind of just staring really closely at that. I'd said, you know, if things go right, you know, this team could be right in there. You know, Solomon Hill plays more like the guy from the playoffs than he was in the regular season last year, earlier in the regular season. If Terrence Jones is more of the guy that AD played next to at Kentucky rather than the guy than last year who just didn't seem recognizable. Those sort of things. I thought, you know, maybe they could make a run. This team is pretty much built to showcase AD, and this guy is potentially amazing. But yeah, the Jrue injury just kind of sets them back even more. So they go from a team that could flirt with 500, you know, around that range, to a team that, you know, might struggle to get there.
Yeah, I'm the same way, and I think, you know, there were reasons before the Holiday situation. There were some reasons that you could be optimistic. And I think one of them is just that they were to me, and still are to a degree, when they have everybody. They're certainly a mystery at the beginning now. But even when they have everybody, I think they're a mystery. They're a team that you don't know. They could go one of a million ways. But the optimistic look at them, there was an optimistic look at them. And one of the reasons you could look at it is to say they added a lot of guys who haven't been, they're not exactly, you know, they lost two good scorers and they replaced them with guys who aren't explosive scorers. But this is an offense that's done great favors for guys who have been, you know, maybe a little quiet offensively over the course of their careers, but they get into this system and they play a lot better offensively. That's happened a lot. That, you know, I think they showed it to guys. They showed documentation of that to guys in free agency to say, look at the leap some people have made. And so I think there was a theory that some of those guys, a thought that some of those guys could make that leap. And a thought, I think, as you said, I think this whole thing was, and I've said this before, this offseason was built around the idea that, you know, we as a franchise believe in Anthony Davis and we're going to get guys who we feel like maximize his chances of being, you know, the player he was 2 years ago and the player that we think he is. But yeah, Jrue Holiday is such a big part of that. And it was such a big, important year for Holiday to begin with, you know, the free agent Holiday and the franchise with his free agency and all that. And now just this creates so many questions. And I think it will be tough for them to kind of get back from where they go at the beginning because that, you know, I think, and I talked to Mason Ginsburg about this last week, I would guess they're probably going to start Tim Frazier at point guard, most likely to me. because I think he's the true point guard out of that bunch. Like you said, they added some guys who are versatile guys, but they don't really necessarily do the things you want them to do. And then, you know, that raises the question of whether you can start a Tim Frazier and Buddy Hield backcourt defensively. So are you going to start one of those other guys at the two? And there's just so many questions now.
And if you're looking at kind of the calculus of the starting lineup, kind of the equation there, you wonder what they're going to do with some of those other positions. I mean, if they're going to go with kind of more of an offensive first guy and Tim Frazier, I think he's scrappy, but I'm not sure that he's necessarily the type of guy defensively who's really shown himself to be, you know, a kind of a frontline defender. What are you going to do with the rest of the positions? You know, are you going to play him and Omer Asik together? Two guys who at this point, I think it's fair to say, might be close to liabilities on that end, depending on what sort of guy we're getting in Omar this year. And then does that mean you want to start Etwan Moore on the off guard, a guy who could try to play small ball and convince Anthony Davis to play center? So it just opens up a load of questions that you didn't have when you have a guy like Drew to really stabilize the whole unit.
Yeah, the other thing, you get into some interesting situations if you talk about, because I've always thought Omer would start. Just because of the AD, the politics of AD at center, like you're going to play him there, and they're probably going to finish a lot of games with him there. But I think the smart play is to not start him there just for his peace of mind or whatever. But if you have Tim Frazier, you have Omer, you've got some guys out on the floor who, you know, depending on also what you're doing at that other forward spot, like you figure Solomon Hill's going to start there probably, but it's not a great lineup for stretching the floor. It's not a great lineup for creating space.
Yeah, and then you get into the injuries. I mean, it's funny that we haven't even talked about the injured guys here. I mean, how healthy is Quincy Pondexter this year, and how quickly can he make it back? Is Tyreke Evans ever going to make it back? And, I mean, if Quincy's in there, I mean, you look at what they did with him, not last year, but the year before that, and, you know, he kind of unlocked this whole team. He kind of gave them the sort of stretch three that they really needed, 3-and-D type of guy that they really hadn't had and haven't had since up until the Solomon Hill signing. I think like he provides a lot of, you know, opportunities, but then again, like how many ball handlers do you really have on that first unit? You'd have Frazier and let's say Quincy and Solomon Hill, two guys who are willing ball movers. I think that's a big plus in Solomon Hill's case, kind of a smart guy who I think you could trust to make the right play. But then who else is getting Anthony Davis involved? Who's your secondary ball handler who's going to be able to kind of create a little bit more? So definitely a lot of questions when you lose a guy like Drew.
Yeah, I think, you know, so many times last year, Alvin Gentry would come out and say, well, we didn't get AD the ball enough. And I think part of the goal of this year was to just never say that again. I think that was part of what they were trying to build. And now you do run into that situation where it could present itself as a problem again.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to the way the whole, like, everything came together last year. You know, I think it seemed like it was sort of like a plug-and-play situation where you get Alvin Gentry, who seemed like at that point was such a clear upgrade over what they had. I mean, not to say that Monty did a poor job, but at the very least, it seemed like Gentry, given his pedigree, considering the way the NBA was going, he could just slide into this situation and kind of unlock Anthony Davis and some of these other players in a way that they hadn't been before. And honestly, I think we've talked about this in the past. I think Alvin probably thought that as well. I think he thought he saw Anthony Davis and kind of a clear up team on the rise, and he can kind of just slide in, and there you go. There's your ready-made contender, the sort of team that he really hasn't even – I don't know if he's had that sort of team in his entire coaching career. I mean, the Suns were good, obviously, in his first year, but they didn't have a guy like Anthony Davis. And then, you know, it just seems like things just kind of fell apart from there. And you wonder, you know, how much going back on that, was he really the right guy? If you need to fit specific sort of guys around him. I mean, I still think Alvin, to a large degree, has gotten an incomplete on his roster with this team, considering all the injuries and stuff like that. But, you know, it's really been kind of a disappointment, I think, for everyone, including for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think for him, I think you would definitely have to include him in that because, you know, he's not had the roster one day. He hasn't had a full team for a single day that he thought he would have. So that I'm sure that's frustrating. What, you know, I've had to talk about this so much on this podcast and elsewhere. So I'll make you talk about it for a second. Where is your head right now on Tyreke Evans?
I really don't know what to make of it at this point. It's just such a confusing situation where, I mean, it seems like Tyreek has had some, you know, significant injury troubles before. Talked to Dwayne Brooks, their head trainer, for a story I did at the end of the season. And not in addition to the three surgeries that he'd had, or three procedures he'd had on that knee, he'd pretty much, you know, to his credit, willingly gave up that, you know, there had been past issues that, although may have not even resulted in the surgery, I think he's called it like trace fusion. So like marks of like, you know, things that have happened in the past that this could be sort of a kind of an ongoing situation. So on one level, it's purely kind of an injury concern. You know, what is this young man able to really do? Is it a classic case of a guy who's just been injury bitten and just hasn't been able to kind of do that? But on the other hand, it does seem like there's mounting frustration, or at the very least, some sort of tension there, where it's like kind of information is trickled out with Alvin Gentry kind of saying, I think it bleeds to Zach Lowe, you know, he's not going to be ready for the season. And then Tyree kind of on Instagram, I don't want to say passive aggressively, but at the very least, he's been posting a lot of stories of himself kind of, you know, working out to say like he's getting back in shape. I also saw him, you know, he was doing kind of the general preseason, you know, photos that they had at whatever event they were doing the other day. So I'm not really sure. I mean, I think it's really telling when Alvin says, you know, he's icing on the cake for this season. I think that's a pretty clear sign that they're willing to move ahead without him. I really don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, I don't know, and I've said this before, I don't know what to make of the Instagram stuff either, because, you know, it's not like he sent a lot of videos of himself cutting and jumping and doing, like, basketball things. Yep. There's been some jumping in there, but we haven't seen him, like, cut or run, you know, we haven't seen him play basketball. That's, you know, until you see a guy play basketball, it's hard to read too much into anything that you see on a video.
Yeah, and I think it's funny that of all the people that they bring in as a potential kind of Drew safety valve here is Lance Stevenson, whom someone described him to me as kind of like baby Tyreek Evans, which right. I think is pretty funny.
Right. So we should talk about Lance, because we're media people and he's Lance. And that seems like the kind of thing that we should talk about. You know, one of the people I asked people to ask if they had any questions on Twitter, one of the guys, Crescent City Connect, who's a regular at Neo Nirvana, like a regular question asker, asked, what do you think of the Lance Stevenson signing and who do you think will get cut? And I assume what he's asking there is who will get cut to make us a roster space for Lance Stevenson. And we should say that today, on September 15th, I'm not sure it won't be Lance Stevenson. You know, there it's not a guarantee that he's going to be on this team.
Yeah, I think that's a big question. I mean, we still haven't even made it to media day, which is next week. Like, right. There's a lot to be decided. You know, I've heard some talk about, like, who would be the likely suspect there. I answered this to someone the other day. I said Alonzo G would be the path of least resistance. I know that there's a lot of politics behind that, yep. Given he's so close to Anthony Davis. But, you know, if you look at just him being on kind of a close to minimum contract or minimum contract, you know, he would make the most sense. And the Pelicans in the past have been really good about moving around resources in order to kind of, you know, find a way to not feel that blow. I mean, obviously, Alexa Ginza is a guy that could come up if they can move his contract. But then I think you're looking at Cheick Diallo. I mean, what are they going to get from him this season? Is that the type of guy that they envision minutes for, even a few? Because I'm not sure I would feel great considering Anthony Davis's reluctance to play full-time center. Maybe that changes this year. I guess we'll see. But only having Omer as your one true center on the roster, I mean, obviously Solomon Hill and Terrence Jones can play more stretch four next to AD. Diallo is kind of in that mix too, more of a 4-5. But I don't know. At this point, I wouldn't really look at getting rid of Vigenza for that reason.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Unless they were going to do something that got another piece moved away, and they were thinking about, you know, if you hold on to Robert Sacre or something, yep, along those lines, you know, if he's going to be in camp, to me, it's going to be hard to go in with just Omer and Sheck. I don't see Sheck playing a whole lot of minutes, but I do think he's a guy who so many people have told me there's a chance, and it might not materialize, but there's a chance he's a real steal. He's a guy who they want to develop and could turn into, you know, people know this, but 2 years ago he was considered on the level of all these other great guys in his age group, And he just, you know, he just didn't play in college. There's still a whole lot of question marks about him. I think that that's a guy, they're not going to play him a lot, but I don't think they're going to abandon his development for getting another piece on a roster. So he's going to be around. Actually, I want to bring that up. Somebody else asked a question. Tom DDA, I believe is how you say it. He's at Tom DDA. Just asked what the challenges are, what the chances were that Diallo would get sent to the NBDL to open a roster spot and get him some playing time. And the fact is, he wouldn't necessarily do either one of those two things. He definitely would not open up a roster spot, right? That's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a D-League team, so they wouldn't really have a lot of control over how much he played wherever he goes.
Yeah, and I guess that points to more of an organizational thing. I think in the past, like if you look at some of the Pelicans personnel moves, I mean, you could come up with criticisms, but one of the good things they've been like kind of doing well here is being able to mine guys from the D-League.
Yep.
That they don't necessarily have control over. They've kind of found a way, and I guess this is kind of a market inefficiency they've been exploiting, finding kind of solid contributors that they didn't really have to put the equity into. They really bought them without really investing much. And, you know, Tim Frazier being the latest example, Bryce Dejean-Jones last year. We didn't really get to see what he could really do, but another guy who they really seemed to, you know, to like there. But, you know, they really have in the past kind of eschewed sort of doing it themselves. And this is kind of the first situation I can think of in a while where they have a guy who probably shouldn't be playing in the NBA a lot this year, would be better off in the D-League. But I don't know what they would really do there. I mean, you could, like you said, send him to the D-League, but you really don't benefit much from that if you're not going to have any control over how he develops or how much he even plays.
Yeah, and they have some control over where he goes, right? But not a ton. It's like a flex assignment. Somebody has to agree to take him. It's a little bit complicated. It's not simple the way it's simple if you have your own team. It's a very different thing. This is, you know, you mentioned it's the first time they've had a guy like this in a while. Really, they haven't had guys young. They haven't had guys younger than Anthony Davis. So this is a rarity for them. They just haven't had this kind of pick who, you know, they could stand to do this with. The other guys, as you said, have been. When I talked to Sean Dawson recently, who's going to be in camp with them, and his agent. And his agent talked about exactly what you talked about. The Pelicans have this reputation for being able to do this. And that was one of the reasons why, even with 15 guaranteed contracts, they went there to get themselves a showcase for a team that is really good at using the D-League even without a team. You know, they had Bryce Dejean-Jones in camp. He went away and signed somewhere else, and then they brought him back in. And so I think that they do have that reputation. But yeah, this Shek Diallo is a very different situation from those. He signed with their big club, and so they only have so much flexibility with him. And I am correct in that it does not create a roster spot. If he's one of your 15, he's one of your 15 no matter where he goes.
Yeah, and that's my understanding as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just to talk about Czech for a minute, I mean, I love that they did that, you know, especially if you're going to go with Buddy Hield in the first round, kind of a guy who's a little bit older, a guy who I guess presumably you would expect to be a contributor, like a full time contributor on the NBA club sooner. Going with a guy in the second round who has just a ton of upside, a guy who just like really hasn't even played in college, but seems like the type of guy who could, if he develops the way that I think the team wants and a lot of people are expecting him to, could be like a perfect complement to Anthony Davis. It shows that even though the team has a lot of pressure on it this season, as you kind of mentioned there, the front office, you know, we'll see what ends up happening to them as a result of what goes on this season. But they are still thinking long term, which is nice to see.
Yeah, that's actually something somebody said to me toward the end of the season, that would be a real question, how they were going to handle this going forward, because you did have people whose jobs were on the line, and would they do what was smart? And one of the things they talked about was trading that first round pick. Now, if you're not super high on Buddy Hield, then maybe you think they should have done that. But the idea was, would they keep that? Would they try to make a play for their future, or would they panic and do something right now? And I think they took the right approach to that, which is this. I think they looked at that. I think they looked at trading it, and there wasn't anything there that they thought was better than what they had at that pick. And so they didn't do it. They didn't make a panic trade. And I do think that they're doing the right things for laying a foundation. It's just that it may take some time. And if it doesn't work out, the guys laying the foundation might not be the guys who are building the finished product.
Yeah. And I think looking at Tyreek's situation is another way to kind of gauge the way things are going for the front office. Are they going to swallow his contract here and just kind of let him walk this offseason and kind of just utilize that cap space and and do it that way, which might be the most prudent approach there, kind of long-term thinking in order to kind of maybe do something with it in the offseason? Or are they going to try to trade him if at all possible? Who knows if that's even possible at this point? And try to make kind of a short-term move in order to move up the standings.
Right. Are they going to try to get Greg Monroe, for example, or somebody right. like that? You know, is there a contract out there they'd be willing to take on? And that's still a question that's out there. And Greg Monroe will never go away. That's just going to be a thing.
I saw him at the bar the other night.
just hanging out in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I was shopping for houses. I was down the street and like I was sitting outside and, you know, enjoying the humid New Orleans summer, and he just walked in. I was like, oh, hey, Greg Monroe.
If he wasn't from there, that would be weird. That would be like, you'd really think something was up. If he was like, if he was from Columbus, Ohio, and you just saw him hanging out in New Orleans after all these trade rumors, that might be a thing.
Yeah, he was not wearing a full Pelicans jersey, so I can't say that.
It's just like a t-shirt or something? Just
right, just a whole warm-up gear. At like 10 o'clock at night.
What else? You know, we talked about a little about kind of the expectations we sort of had for this group and how they've been altered by Holiday. What's interesting to you? This is a team that has a chance to start off very poorly. They got to, you know, who knows what they're going to be if they ever get all the pieces together. Like, what interests you as a guy that covers the team going into this year? We're like a week away from training camp, basically. What else is interesting to you about them?
Yeah, I think, like, as you mentioned, I think first and foremost, how they kind of deal with Drew's loss. I guess it's a loss. I feel bad saying loss because nothing's really been lost yet. He's still a big part of the team and everything. That's going to be a big question mark. I mean, I'm in love with Lance. I just want to be around Lance as much as possible. Like, I hope we interview him every day just for the Lance experience.
Yes.
I'm really looking at Solomon Hill, and I guess this is, again, a little bit more deep cut. And seeing what he's able to do. I think he's a really interesting guy. We were able to talk to him once on a conference call, and just from that, I think Scott Kushner was like, you know, this guy is going to be our favorite quote. Just because, like, I think the way he talks about basketball is just like super interesting. I know a lot of guys, like, if you were to ask me about my job, I couldn't like articulate it well, but he just has like clearly a skill of kind of breaking things down. So I'm really, and just for this team in general, I think he's kind of a key component. I mean, they spent the most money on him. He's a guy who's playing a pretty important position considering their history at the three. And considering that for even when this team was good, they had the issue of, you know, kind of an offense-defense trade-off with Ryan Anderson and Omer. They really never had one guy who can kind of slot in next to AD and then all your problems were solved. I mean, Ryan did a lot of good in his time here, but I think last year, even if healthy, I think there was still a big question mark about whether or not this team could defend at a high enough level to really make it deep into the playoffs. And so you kind of have a guy who, if all things go well, he might be kind of a perfect, you know, closing stretch four guy. If he can hit from the corner three and defend like, you know, he seems like he's capable of, can really kind of do a lot for this team.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy to me too, on the level that, you know, on a very basic level that, you know, I was listening to Tim Bontemps' podcast the other day. He had Brian Windhorst on and they were talking about him and they kind of just groaned at the idea of all the money they had given a guy who scored 4 points a game last year. And I get that. And so he's going to be one of those guys who, if he's not good, everybody's going to say, oh boy, you know, you threw this money at a guy who averaged 4 points a game. What did you expect? But he's also a guy who was a lot better than that the year that Paul George was hurt. He is a guy who, you know, I think has a chance to make kind of a leap in the offense and be important defensively. And also, I think he's a really great test for their scouting because they've loved him for a long time. I mean, this is a guy who they were in pursuit of on his draft night. That's not something they made up as a narrative when they went after him. This is a guy that I know they were talking about during the season. They talked about a trade, except his contract situation made a trade not make a lot of sense for them. And so he's interesting from that standpoint because they can look really bad for that signing, or they could be really, really vindicated if he's that kind of player.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what I was going to say, just like in terms of like him, looking at him as a small example in kind of like a broader sense about this being kind of a trial by fire for the front office here. Just, you know, it seems like there are some like lingering doubts about where this team is headed. And, you know, if there's one big storyline I've been looking at just in terms of since I've been down here is, you know, how is this small market team going to develop under with kind of like one of the best raw resources in all the NBA. I mean, I don't mean to be like reductive, but it does seem like when all comes down to it, like having a star player in the NBA is the most important thing. And that's what you need. It's the first thing you need on your checklist. And, you know, this season, it does feel like the Pelicans are kind of in an inflection point. You know, they can either, you know, keep going down this path, or maybe they show enough that front office stays on, everyone stays on, and they keep kind of going down this way. Or maybe they're in a situation where ownership now, a few years into this, has to really look at themselves and say, you know, do we really want to keep going about things the way that we've been doing it? Are we going to continue to have the Saints executives above some of our guys that are on the basketball side? I think it really opens up a lot of questions in that regard.
It's funny you bring that up, because like I've had so many people ask me about the way that works. People ask me all the time, like, how exactly is it structured? Who exactly reports to who? Who exactly is making these personnel decisions if they decide about firing this person or keeping that person? And I'm like, you know, I'm here, and I can't tell you exactly the way this works. I can't tell you the exact nature of the power structure here. It's an odd setup.
Yeah, for sure. The way I've always looked at it, and like you said, it is kind of shrouded in a little bit of mystery. The way I look at it is almost like Dell is kind of the movie director on set here. Like, he's making probably all of the major decisions, but you know, there's still influence from like the studio or like a producer from the studio sort of deal.
Justin, by the way, moved here from Los Angeles.
Right, exactly. And I'm wearing sunglasses as I say this, and a suit. It's impossible for that not to leak over in some way, just in terms of just like, you know, everyday activities. I mean, they share like cafeteria space and employees.
Right. It's unusual. I mean, it's just not a normal kind of team situation. They're the only team that has this kind of setup. And so it is a little bit confusing. And you're right. I said this before, it's an important year for them regardless. I think, you know, they still have, as we talked about, there's still so many extenuating circumstances. And in a way, it's going to still feel like if they're not good this year and they start off poorly, and the bad start is a big part of the reason why they're bad, it's a really tough decision because, again, these guys will have just dealt with such extenuating circumstances. It's remarkable the number of things they've been through just since the time I got here, from an injury and you know, unavailability standpoint, just the sheer number of guys who have not been around for whatever reason.
Yeah, and which is kind of disappointing because I feel like they've had one of their best off seasons, maybe in the front office's history. I don't know. Maybe you could say like the trade for Chris Paul brought back some guys whom they might not have blossomed here, or definitely kind of showing themselves elsewhere. Al-Farouk being kind of the guy I'm thinking about there. But you know, it seems like they did everything you could. I mean, if you didn't have the option of going out there and getting kind of a frontline guy next to play with. To play next to AD, kind of getting some of these role players with upside, with potential, who are still in that kind of age range where they still have, you're not paying for past production so much as you are potentially just kind of future production. You know, I really liked what they did this offseason. I think a lot of people around the NBA liked what they did, but it's a kind of a sad state of affairs where that may not matter. And then I just look back a few years ago with the Jrue Holiday trade. I mean, it's funny how something like that can have such lingering effects.
Yeah.
And like we were saying before, like, I love Jrue. I love the way he carries himself and the way he plays. Like, I'm a big fan of his game. I just really like watching him play. But I think a lot about Breaking Bad in this regard, and not just because, you know, I can make a bad joke about devious bald people, but I'll stay away from that. I think, like, when you talk about the show, a lot of critics would say, like, they do a great job of plotting things out and how everything that happens at one end of the season happens at the back end of the season. And just, like, all, like, actions have reactions, so to speak. And it's funny how, like, to this day, like, the moves that they made years ago are probably going to dictate the fate of this season a few years later.
Yeah, that's I think that's true. There's a butterfly effect, I guess, to everything that they've done. It's a fascinating franchise in a lot of ways. It's not, you know, it's certainly not one of the elite franchises, but it's one of the real intriguing ones. And some of that is probably because we're around it all the time and we think about it more than a lot of people think about it. But I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by what they're going to be, and I'm fascinated by what happens to Jrue Holiday, both in terms of getting back this season and what he decides to do in the off season. And you know, all of this You know, as you said, the hardest thing to do in the NBA is get a superstar. And it's particularly hard in New Orleans because basically you have to draft him to get one. Maybe you can trade for a superstar somewhere down the road. But for the most part, in a market like New Orleans, to get one, you have to draft one. And then now, you know, the narrative really starts this year, I think, about keeping the superstar and being able to hold on to him long term. That doesn't mean they have to be good this year. But I think that will be a thing that people will talk about a whole lot. I've said this year in the offseason a lot, I think there will be a lot of like Anthony Davis, Carl Anthony Towns comparisons. That's going to be a big Anthony Davis storyline. And the bigger one is going to be like, how do they keep him here past 2020?
Yeah, and I think it's funny just to show you how deep we are into this situation that like we're now getting to in-depth Anthony Davis stuff.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, no, I think that's the biggest thing. I think there's a lot of external pressure on him at this point. To prove that he is the guy from 2 years ago, not the guy that he was last season. I think at this point, the injury thing, fair or not, is starting to catch up to him. And people are starting to wonder, you know, if he's going to be the type of guy who could is going to be available for the requisite amount of games in order to be up for some of those awards like he was All-NBA and such. And so I think this is kind of a prove it season. And it does feel like, just the way, as you mentioned, the roster was constructed, it almost feels like the organization is pushing it in that direction as well, unintentionally or subconsciously, just like basically saying, we have this guy, let's take advantage of him, and we'll see if ultimately he is kind of transformative guy that we all expected him to be a few years ago.
Yeah, it's a huge year for him. I think he's going to be very motivated, assuming that he's healthy and ready to go. I think he's going to be pretty fired up by, because you just did what I do all the time and what everybody does and rightly does, which is to say, like, he's got to be the player he was 2 years ago and not the player he was last year, who, by the way, was like a real good player. He was a really good player last year, but really good is not what he was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, people were talking about, when does his window open to be the best player in this league? And that is not a conversation we're having, not a conversation we were having during last season very often.
Yeah, and like you said, it's kind of unfair. I went through this a little bit in Los Angeles when Blake Griffin kind of came to form. He showed himself as kind of this you know, amazing dunker, and you know, he's all over the place, and he's putting up all these highlights. And then, you know, some of the preening and some of the kind of theatrics he does on the court started to take precedent, to the point where like other guys in the league, like DeMarcus Cousins, was kind of calling him out for certain things, and you know, it was to the effect where, you know, we kind of build people up just to break them down. I wouldn't say it's to that extent. There are definite things you can point to last season that weren't, you know, up to the same level of caliber that Davis had played at in years past. But, you know, I think we're definitely going to figure this out this season. You know, are those fair criticisms, or were those just kind of blips on the radar based on some of the injuries, or maybe just, you know, just general, you know, developmental things?
I'll ask you, I'm not going to ask you for like a prediction on wins, because I wouldn't make one, because I who knows with this situation. But there is an Anthony Davis prediction I think is kind of an interesting idea, which is that last year when the GMs did that annual survey that they do, I think he got 86% of the votes as the guy you would build your franchise around. Give me a percentage this year you think he's going to get in that vote.
Well, that's a really good question. I still feel like around the league, there's a lot of, you know, just appreciation for his potential and what he could be. I do feel like Towns might have like surpassed him.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's going to be interesting to see that vote. Actually, I wonder how much Towns gets in comparison to Davis.
That to me is the question of it. I think that's like the question of the poll, because Towns is going to get a bunch, and I won't be surprised if Towns is the leader. Nobody, I don't think, will get 86%, you know, but I kind of have a feeling Towns will be number one.
Yeah, I would say maybe close to like 30% for AD.
I was gonna say 25. I think it's in that ballpark probably.
Yeah, and part of it's a lot of it's just like, you know, what have you done for me lately sort of deal.
Yep.
But you know, again, the injuries. I mean, people look at that as kind of, you know, his last hurdle to kind of to jump over here. I think he really needs to prove it this season.
Yeah, to me, that's still the whole thing. It's if you look at his season last year and what he did compared to the year before, there are so many reasons for the little drop off in efficiency. He was catching the ball in different places. The team around him was so banged up and so inconsistent, and they just didn't even have, just from one night to the next, you didn't know who was going to be playing with you. It was a new coach. There's just a ton of stuff. I think if he had just been healthy and had the year he had, I don't think there would be as much question about him. But I think going forward, that's the thing. I think that's what's going to be the knock on him as people talk about him. It's not so much what kind of season he had or that he's regressing. I don't think he's regressed. He didn't have quite as good a year. The thing is going to be, people are going to say, if he can't ever play 75 games, if he can't ever play 70, how can you view him as this top one, top three, top five type guy?
Yeah. And definitely on the defensive end is something to look at there. I mean, I think as we discussed, there are a lot of defensive upgrades made. So we'll see if he can be kind of that kind of intimidating rim protector that, you know, he's been pretty much throughout his entire career or life since he had that growth spurt or whatever.
Did he have a growth spurt?
I've heard that. Yeah, I can't really confirm that, but I think that's the case.
Yeah.
It does feel like, right or wrong, it does feel like there also is a lot of pressure on Alvin in order to kind of unlock him in the way that I think a lot of people expected him to. Just because all of the 3-point shooting, it seemed like it was everybody excited what he could do last year. And then it kind of soured pretty quickly into, well, are they utilizing him properly? Why isn't he near the basket more? Why is he out shooting 3-pointers when, you know, he's so great and athletic that if he just attacks the rim the whole time, you know, he's just transformative. Right or wrong, you know, I do feel like to a certain extent the coaching staff might catch some flack for that as well.
Yep. You know, Justin, there's like a million things we could talk about, but we've talked a long time and we've had, as people may notice, maybe notice a little, a few technical difficulties. So like while the sound is clear, I'm just going to stop now. But this was fun and we can always do it again is the thing. And that way, I just know I won't have to get further into you making like another excellent point that gets damaged by a bad connection.
Yeah. Let's go on top before all of my mumbles just kind of like destroy the podcast.
Yeah, I'll have to do a little editing. I think we're going to test my editing skills. We're going to see if I'm the editor that I think I am. And if I'm not, you know, people can mock me. That's all right with me.
I've always said that you're the Anthony Davis of podcast editing.
Well, we're going to find out if I'm the 2 years ago Anthony Davis or the, you know, whatever. anyway, thanks for doing it. I will be seeing you a lot soon. Thanks for being here and get ready for media day.
Yeah, thank you. See.
All right, thanks, Justin. See, that audio wasn't so bad. Got it mostly cleaned up. I want to thank Justin Verrier for coming on. Make sure that you are following his work. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin Verrier. Want to remind you to check out SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app. Click that settings tab and enter a promo code. Enter LOPELS. That's LOPELS. SeatGeek is going to send you $20 back on your first purchase. That's it for this week. Next week, media day, training camp is going to get started. There's going to be a lot to talk about. Don't know how many days. We'll definitely get back into a daily schedule at some point once training camp gets started. Not sure we'll do that next week, but whatever form next week takes, I will be here. I hope you will be too.
Takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.